Performance Euro Works. We're what, Elk Grove Village?
Elk Grove Village.
This is, just saw your cool four-wheel drive dyno jet. That's pretty rad.
Yeah, appreciate it. Yep.
Who am I talking to?
So this is Alex Roy, owner and founder of Performance Euro Works.
And then Ryan Upham, just hang out, race cars.
Yeah, leave your car here, put
leave
a K-swap in it.
No big deal.
Drop in every now and again, do some work on it, get in the way.
So Ryan, you ran this thing. You used to run this in Time Attack with us in NASA, what, GTS2?
GTS 3, 4, and ST3.
All of them.
We did vintage racing with it. We've done a ton of shit
with
it.
Yeah, you took it to the Hawk event.
Right, yeah, that was awesome.
And now you're you ran GLTC the last couple of years here and there, a bunch of races last year.
Right. Pretty much we did better the first year.
Oh, did you run the whole season the first year?
Yeah, we took fifth overall.
That's right.
We did really good.
They kind of all blur together.
Yeah. Last year, not as great. There's just a few problems. And then the competition obviously steps up every year.
Dude, it's getting out of control.
Absolutely. And we took, from the get-go, we took a NASA car and made it work. And that was successful year one.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then as people just started to load in, taking a NASA car and just making it work is no longer the formula. You got to dedicate to the series.
You almost have to.
And the rules really aligned with... This car, we gutted it from the get-go back in the day when we could only make, 210 horsepower.
Yep.
So I don't like the idea of adding 400 pounds of ballast to accommodate, a V8 or something.
Right.
And an inline six-cylinder detune just doesn't make the torque.
Yeah, I was actually on a two-hour call about power band stuff from, 7 until I left from the Grid Life office. And I can see why you're putting this little cutie in here.
Yeah.
you put a K24 in this thing. It's an E36.
Right.
You got a lot of firewall moved. What are y'all doing here?
So
what have you found out with the swap?
What most people said, I pestered Dave quite a bit. We've known him for a long time. So
Dave Calzada from K-Miata.
Right.
K-Power.
And I was like, so when are you making a kit? And he finally told me at Midwest Fest. He's like, dude, I'm not. He's like, I bought 3 FRSs just to perfect the kit for street, because that's going to be our primary market. I totally get it. He's like, you're in a race car, cut it up, make it fit, weld it.
Right.
So we went back and we reassessed it a bunch of times. And what basically made me do it was the price of S54s is so dumb.
Dude, you told me that. They're freaking out of control.
I bought
$6,000.
Oh, they're even higher than
$8,000.
I bought the motor for $1,800.
No.
8 years ago, 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And I sold it for $8,000.
And you raced the shit out of it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of maintenance, that's the only shitty part.
Like, yeah, rod bearings. We had hundreds of hours on track in it.
Yeah, we had a lot of time.
Yeah.
So that was the big thing. And basically,
you had to do rod bearings and all that other stuff to keep it alive.
Every season.
Every other year, rod bearings, and then on top of that, we had to do always do valve adjustments and whatnot because it's mechanical.
Are the rod bearings in that thing? Like you drop the crossmember, drop the pan, do it
exactly. Yeah, so front suffering's coming down, oil pan's coming out, the whole oil pump system is out.
It's not cheap.
Do you have to spec them, or did you order it for the engine number? Or
we do. So actually, we do work with different bearing manufacturers, and some of them have made proprietary bearings that have extra clearance for the oil that we use, etc. But yeah, no, I mean, it's been proven to work so well. I mean, again, Ryan's a pure testament to
that. That's freaking nuts.
And you just find there's always something going to break. The one year, we ended the year at a track day at Audubon, and as I'm rounding the last corner, the car just shook like you wouldn't believe. And I'm like, what the fuck's going on? Can I swear?
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Well, we've had an explicit warning for 5 years. Maybe 6.
All right, cool. So I get off track and I'm like, dude, it's the end of the year. I'm not even going to bother to look at it.
Just put it in the trailer.
Right.
And go home,
yeah. Next time I fired it up, it was fine. And then we come to look at it, and Lewis actually found that the harmonic balancer split in half. And then I start to research it. That's another thing you got to log. Count your hours.
OEM can only last so long.
Dude, and it was the same thing. Back in the day, forever ago, I had that Evo that I tried to... I time attacked all over.
Wasn't that in modified mag, too?
Yeah. I did a lot with it, but I was always trying to punch above my weight. I didn't have the budget to successfully punch above my weight. I was there.
Right.
I got a couple licks in every now and again, but it's just too much at the time for me.
Winning shit is so expensive and hard.
Dude, it's a lot.
It's so hard, dude.
But we constantly found out that there was always something creeping up, a newfound expense, and that car had an operating cost. I mean, it was $250 an hour to drive that car.
Yeah.
I think I factored it out. We bought, race fuel by the barrel and shit.
Yeah.
I think he's gonna.
Oh, that's fine. It'll pick up background noise, but it's not big. It should be turning off. He's got a big old furnace.
Yeah.
Gotta stay warm here. So right now the recorder's just balancing on the K-Power K24 manifold. What did you find when you took the S54 out for fitment in this thing?
So the first thing we found, we kind of knew that we were gonna have front sump issues because Lewis had been playing with it already.
Right.
Putting
it looks kind of Miata-like, but
right. So the subframe.
Miata would put it way up here.
Right. And so we notched the subframe, and then he was looking at the firewall. Now the firewall looks like there's a lot taken out, but if you look at a stock E36, that's typically where the heater core is.
Okay.
So it's a heater core pocket. We just cut that out.
Okay.
Then we built the wall straight down. We went a little bit more just so that we could put a removable plate to access the top of the tranny.
Yeah, it almost seems like it's because it would go back to here behind the heater.
Right. So we just met up. So basically what we removed at the top meets up with where it would go at the bottom.
Okay. Right.
So it's not. It's really not that crazy.
Could you fit something in there without removing it or no?
No.
Just because the heater core is so built into it and stuff? Or? I can't picture what it is.
What do you mean? Like, so...
Like, could you put the K in without removing all that stuff?
Not without moving the subframe up, like, 3 inches.
Okay. So you'd have to do something at the bottom or, like, totally right. Put the engine in a different spot.
And
you
I'm not...
a lot of space in the front.
And we're not engineers, so the big fear of mine was... Yeah. What if I move the steering rack up a half an inch? What difference does that make? I don't know.
That might change a lot of things.
And I spoke with I forget his name. I feel like a dick. The clown shoe Z3M guy. He works with ASM a lot.
Oh yeah, Artsum. Right?
That's it. It's a name that's not normal to me.
He's a good fab dude.
He was telling me, he's like, do not move the steering rack at all. You do not understand just the littlest amount with the bind that you'll have, you know, all this stuff. So I'm like, dude, we can't touch anything. Because Lewis was kind of experimenting with it.
Right.
And I said, not on mine. Mm-hmm. We finally got the car handling really, really good.
And is this the OEM translocation too? Or is the trans moved at
its
all?
Trans is a little bit further back.
Oh, it's back.
We have to cut the drive shaft. Like, I don't think it wasn't that much.
Yeah, not much. Okay. I mean, not even like a
inch. Because we could basically use the factory trans mount. We just drilled another hole.
So right now, for listeners, the crank bolt is like vertical with the back of the steering rack itself. So like the front of the crank bolt. So the engine's quite a ways back. But,
yeah.
That's going to be easy for maintenance, especially if you've got a removable panel back there.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Yeah, so it should be. It's kind of a neat little approach, and we were looking at a lot of the, the touring cars in the mid '90s and whatnot, right. And the factory BMW, which I think was it an S14 or P14? They used some sort of crazy
a P14 technically.
And it really is. It's theirs is a little bit further forward than this, but they would have, they had the shock towers tied in and the crazy cross braces and all kinds of cool stuff. So
are you guys gonna fab up a cool. With these things?
Yeah, well, actually, I didn't realize I cracked. This is all cracked up.
You gotta weld some things to the.
Yeah, so this has to go to the bottom. But actually, before you left, or before you came here, and before Lewis left, he was telling me how to use the notcher because the one thing we're gonna do, a few people have been talking about the setbacks of the tall 2.4 liter,
right.
A lot of vibrations, some stuff fails.
Right.
I don't know. The S54 is a super tall motor and didn't really have the issues.
Right.
But then again, it's an engine that was designed to go into a rear-wheel drive platform.
It's designed for big revs, whereas these things are like 7,000 RPM engines that everybody wants to go 85.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. So
I mean, they could do it.
Yeah. And we contacted, I went to James. James Houghton's had so much success with the K24, and I said, who do you, suggest? So I definitely used some of the people we race with just to ask questions,
And this engine is, like, so proven in track car world and race car world.
Right. So he said, hit up Unit 2 Fab. They did I contacted him, got the oil pan that everyone seemed to... I mean, it even says in the description, multiple front-wheel drive and rear-wheel drive GLTC wins.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because I was kind of like... Because I was like... I started to do some research. Can I use a front-wheel drive pan and a rear-wheel drive car? Right. Is there going to be different slot characteristics?
Yeah, Unit 2 did a good job of baffling, for sure.
So we did that. We did his ported oil pump, oil pump. Some people were like, you don't need it. You're not going to rev it that high. But
Type S.
For $40 extra,
K20 pump.
Yeah, why wouldn't you? I just figured, just do it.
Honda, a lot of times, they have, like, the oil, especially on the older ones, too. Like, the oil goes through, like, a nice big tube, and then it makes, like, the hardest, most awkward 90-degree turn. Mm-hmm. And it, like, necks down. And
yeah.
Why'd you do that? So you take the cover off and port that thing out.
Right.
Yeah.
So in
I'm hitting this, sorry.
Yeah, no, it's fine. You said over there. So we got that, and then so back to the vibrations and stuff. I mean, I talked to Dave Calzetta, and he was I've got some sort of like washer in here that's supposed to help with, I guess, so these dudes have been pounding through throw out bearing or not throw out bearings.
Drive-by-wire throttle bodies.
Throttle bodies, yeah. So we're in the process now of this weekend. Now that the subframe's done.
Right.
And we had to take a big old chunk out of it in the middle to clear the oil pan. But then Lewis has braces that go backwards and then tie into the actual frame. So not only did it create a better cradle, but then it also protects the oil pan quite a bit too.
Okay.
But we're actually going to create some sort of mount system here that everyone on the podcast will see and appreciate.
You're going to go above it here.
That we're going to utilize the OEM front wheel drive mount.
Right.
And then brace it back to the frame to stop that four and a half. So we're going to have four and a half.
That might actually help some of the vibration.
I don't see why it wouldn't. I know some people are bracing the intake manifold, which I'm sure OEM there is some sort of bracketry.
And you might want to.
Absolutely, but I really think like even if you grab it here, you can see there's some movement.
Yeah, so what he's talking about is the front wheel drive engine mount right by the accessory drive is like it's literally almost at valve cover height. It's at the bottom of the valve cover, and so he wants to do an engine mount basically to keep the engine from vibrating front to back like in a front wheel drive, but side to side in rear wheel drive. So that makes sense.
Yeah. So
and triangle there.
Yeah, we'll triangulate it, and BMW did this in their cars too. There's all kinds of really cool pictures to look at and whatnot.
And that'll probably stiffen some front end too. Are you going to weld that to the chassis?
Yeah, so I think we're going to do some sort of ears here. And then this actually, we're debating if it's going to go on the top or if it's going to go in here.
It's like a, basically like a control arm bushing.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think we probably, for ease, will be like this.
Right. And just it'll go right to the front and then,
drop it in and out. So that way, if we have to service the car, we're not having to disassemble like eight things. It should just be three bolts.
Dude, this is going to be sick to work on. There's a lot of room in here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was the big goal with the swap was to make it serviceable, obviously following your rule set, and just reliable and balanced.
Yeah, we allow some firewall modifications for engine swaps. You're doing that, for sure.
Right. And it's not, it's crazy. So it looks, it honestly looks like a shit ton was taken out, and a lot was modified.
I can see it. Like, really, it almost would fit as is. Like,
yeah, right where it goes back to the bottom where the frame curves into the middle, nothing of that was touched.
Yeah.
So.
It's wild. What header is that?
That's the K-Power one as well. Okay. I just honestly, I like, you know, what did it say, shop local, buy local, right? Mm-hmm. So it's, we've known him forever. He's a good friend. And I just like the opportunity to be able to support someone local.
Yeah,
so that's pretty dope.
Tucks to the block really pretty tight, too.
Right.
So. Does the exhaust normally come out on that side, or is it cross under?
It does. It goes in, like, through the passenger side, then kind of comes back over to the driver. And this was designed for the E30, so it's essentially the same. We did have to take about an inch of it out. Because it hung down super low.
Right.
But right where the collector is, we just cut it, and then it'll fit back over.
And you're using, obviously, the K-Power trans to engine adapter. And
right. Stuff, so just went up there, bought everything. It was nice. Picked it up. Hung out with everyone for, caught up with everyone for a half hour,
dude,
45 minutes.
I can't believe how that company has exploded.
Yeah.
Yeah, he really blew up.
It's cool.
From something that, like, he and I were in my truck coming home from mid-Ohio. We had his old Integra on the back of the trailer and my CRX in front of it or whatever. And he was like, man, Austin's Miata was so fun. I really wish I could put my K motor in his Miata. And he was like, I think that would fit. And I was like, I don't know. Let's pull over and measure a K motor. And that's like where it came. Like the idea came up in the truck. And like we built the first prototype in my garage for 6 months. And then he's got a business.
That's awesome.
Really, really proud of him.
Yeah.
Freaking wild. The amount of hours that everybody's putting over there.
Yeah, and it was cool. He was kind of giving me a shop tour and telling me how, like, you know, it was
all the CNC machines
sending stuff out to, like, hey, I think I forget the guy's name, but one of the first employees, like, you know, we could buy used CNC machines,
right.
And it just turned into like this is happening.
He's got like four or five now.
Yeah. I think he has four used and two brand new.
It's crazy.
It's awesome, man.
I mean, just seeing him like expand shop to shop in the last few years,
and they're making so many parts too.
Yeah. It was neat, so I went over there, and I was like, so what, and I, you know, I ignorantly was like, I want to do this swap, what do I need? Just put it in the basket, let's just do it. I hadn't sold the S54 at this point, but I was banking on once that sells, I'm going to reap a bunch of my money back. So I said,
the swap will be a wash or more.
That was the plan. I originally thought I could do it for about eight, and we're probably like 11 in right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, with stuff, things and stuff. And
you got to do ECU, wiring.
Yeah, so,
stuff.
Well, dude, I hit up Alltech, and I was like, it's just what everyone runs. Once again, you know, there's different ECUs. Some people will say better, worse.
There's so many of them in the paddock, too.
And there's and so many. That's it.
Are you running their basically their K harness, or you running a universal harness?
I just went universal. Okay. We thought about going that route, but then at the end of the day,
still got to buy an old harness off the off of a junkyard. Or something.
And this, we got this motor locally, right, like down the street at that JD in Chicago place,
right.
And it was just a really clean motor.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it had a good chunk of the harness.
They're like such a pedestrian engine in Japan and stuff.
Right.
Like people drive to the grocery store twice a week, and then after 6 years, it's like, it's too expensive to have this car anymore. Like, throw away. Like 20,000 miles, you know?
And it was like a total boyhood, I haven't had been to the Japanese car scene forever.
You never bought a JDM engine, probably, right?
Well, not in a long time. I mean, I was real big into the B13 SCR, SR20 DET craze back in the day. I shouldn't say craze. It was me and three other dudes. But in the front wheel drive cars, where we were the nerds with boxy centros and everyone hatches.
Yeah.
But it was cool. You order your motor, you get it on a pallet. What came with it? Was there an exhaust on this one? Sometimes they were modded, whatever.
Yeah.
So it was cool.
Dang, it's got a header.
Yeah. I actually took a pic of all the things there. I took a picture of the wall of all the different strut bars.
Right.
Because that used to be Rice or Cool.
Yeah.
They
have a ton of stuff. I've never been to that place.
Oh, it's cool as shit, dude.
Yeah.
They're literally around the corner.
Yeah, I know they're nice, right here.
Yeah.
I think... Jeremy Boyson was tuning at Mikey's last year, the year before, and they just went over there, bought a new engine, and swapped it just because they were having issues with theirs. Just come around the corner and grab a new engine.
Yeah, that's fucking crazy.
Just got a whole stack of them, man. Is this a TSX, a Accord one or whatever, the double VTEC one?
This is out of a Honda, I think it was a Honda Odyssey.
Yeah, they put them in vans.
Yeah, it's a K24. It's the 3 something. I don't know.
It's like
I think it's 11.5 to 1 compression or something. It's the one to get. It's the one to get.
The TSX motor, basically.
That's what he told me as I paid for it. Don't worry. It's the one you want.
I'm like, I don't worry about that.
But, it's gone pretty good. And then, we utilized the GLTC discount for, the Haltech stuff, dude. That was a big, big savings. It
adds up real quick.
Because it adds up. Yeah, it adds up real quick.
No, those companies are rad.
So, but that's where we're at. And I think it's somewhat daunting. I post pictures here and there. I'm not real big, internet savvy, and I don't like to hear people talk to me sometimes.
Yeah, I love Facebook completely.
Jesus. You post one thing just because you think you're like, hey, it's a rear-wheel drive case swap.
You can't do that. You're stupid.
You fucking idiot. I did it. You don't have to take the subframe out, you dumbass. And it's turns out this guy put an F20 in an E30.
Totally different.
Same thing, asshole.
What about the height here? Is this, could you have lifted it up above the subframe or no?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, it doesn't look really like you got a lot of hood clearance here.
Yeah.
Right? So, unless you did a big old Chevelle shaker cowl hood.
Right.
You
know? Yeah, and the goal too was obviously to keep drive shaft transmission, the whole driveline as level as the factory BMW.
Yeah, so a lot of the things are kind of, the direction we went in one way was kind of dictated by another aspect.
Now, I've always dug this car, especially when you had crazy airbox on the S54 running time attack wide open. I thought it was it was the first S54 that I thought, damn, that sounds cool. A lot of them didn't sound cool back in 2010.
Yeah, they're really raspy, canopies.
Sometimes you get the whole right mixture, and they're rad sounding cars.
Right.
You
know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's an exciting project, dude.
Yeah, I think it'll be cool. And I think, hopefully people, I think they'll notice it. Come take a look at it. We're going to run it at a mundane 210 horsepower. We're not going to push
basically
it.
Basically run the engine.
Pretty much. But if someone, with the price of BMW shit, dude, it's so much money.
That's crazy.
And honestly, the fab work, if you were to bill it out, it wouldn't be that crazy in relation to that swap. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You could have a reliable-ass Honda motor. Mm-hmm. And our other buddy of ours, Eric DeFazio, who's a big, Honda guy, front-wheel drive guy, finally got him to kind of come over from drag racing to do some road racing. He built an EG, and he's
pretty
like, dude,
too.
You can just hot lap it.
Right.
You're going to hot lap it. You don't have to worry about how many events have I done on these rod bearings.
And then when it goes, it's $750 or $900.
Yeah.
Right. So, unfortunately, you're gonna in 10 years you'll probably see them be a couple $1,000s because they're gonna become more rare.
Right.
But they're not gonna be $8,000.
No.
Yeah. Hopefully not. At least.
No.
They sold so many of them.
Dude,
they're still out there. You might be able to find 200,000 mile ones.
My wife's car has one in it.
Yeah, they're $8. Just
pull it out of hers.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird to be at a Euro shop. You're putting a Kama. Is anybody, any of your customers saying anything what is that?
People love it.
Do they?
People love it. So the fascinating thing, and Ryan brought it up a couple of times, is in
the early racing career of the E36, BMW Motorsport put a four-cylinder in their factory race car. Yeah. So it's kind of nice because it pays homage to that history at the same time with the modern technology of such a proven platform.
What do you think weight-wise off the front wheels?
That's a good question.
So
hundreds of pounds, right?
Upon my research, a dressed S54 is 478 pounds.
Right.
And a dressed K24 is 300.
Okay.
So
that's less of a difference than I thought. It's still almost a couple hundred pounds.
Right. And you know, it'll go with the new rule changes with everyone on street tires, and you know, I only run the wing and I won't have like the unnatural power curve, all that stuff. It's going to be perfect. I'll make like 210 horsepower and I can be 2650 or something like
it's
that.
Like right
that's
there.
About right where it should be.
Mm-hmm. And like you're probably the S54 came like 6 or 8 inches further, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're taking weight off the front tires and putting it kind of where you want it to be, too.
Right.
And it's going to be so easy to work on. Like, where does the radiator sit? Like,
right here.
We're all doing it like factory BMW.
We're going to dump that 20 inches, right?
Yeah.
Put a spare K24 in there later.
Just leave it in the front.
Yeah.
Put your spare tire in case you flat spot. Yeah,
right. You know? That's it.
Yeah, it's going to be rad.
Yeah, it'll be a cool car, you know.
Yeah.
So, and we're trying to go for that like mid-90s touring vibe. I took off the big crazy wide body I had.
Right. Yeah, this kit looks really nice. What is this?
It's the Hard Motorsport. It's like they're just over fender kit.
Yeah.
Which is nice because the fender flares that you normally used to get that you just bolted on the arch, they do the job. But after like racing this for so many years, this hides up so many.
Is this fiberglass or plastic?
Plastic, dude.
Yeah, it seems.
It's like a. This is like a WeatherTech floor mat.
It seems
right here,
pretty tough.
It's nice. Well, and that. So I hate my old car. Used to look like it monster trucked because it would always rub, and I hate rubbing. I look at people like Katil in like any of the S2000s, and I'm like, how the fuck isn't it rubbing? And they're like, oh, it rubs. And I'm like, that doesn't bother you. You're going like we're pretty much on it more than we're not, and you're touching a tire all the time. Yeah. So I had mine cut too much. This being plastic, it'll clearance itself.
Right.
And then also, you know, not that we want to have any contact, but if there's little brushes here and there, it's not just going to crack.
Right. Like a regular chopper gun fiberglass.
Yeah.
Right.
You know,
right.
This will give and pop back. You know?
And I put it on myself. I'm not a body man by any stretch of the imagination. I was a bit nervous. I definitely procrastinated. When I looked into how much it would cost to take it to somebody to do, I decided to do it myself.
like the fitment's actually pretty good.
I'm actually pretty stoked about it, and we're going to put a busy livery on it, so anything that you don't like, you won't see. And
it's got that, like, it's almost OEM look, but
yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little fatter.
When you look at the E36, the cool Alpina four-door over there, you notice how much flare doesn't come out.
Right, yeah, it doesn't pop out at all, and this pops out about 2 more inches,
yeah.
3 more inches.
Just enough for 245s, right? There was a time when this car ran 295 A7 square setup on a 10-inch wheel. Those days are long gone. I'm on a 245.
Nobody likes buying A7s anymore.
No, fuck A7s. I was so stoked when you guys were... I bought... Remember when they said, let's do a gentleman race?
Right.
So I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
I bought a set of tires.
After I think I'm qualifying or practice, you went out on them, on the Falcons.
Yeah.
And I was walking up near your pit, and you were like, dude, they're really fun. And I was like, oh, this is going to work. You were like the first one that like gave me a little bit of positive affraffirmation.
Yeah, they were awesome.
Like Scott Robertson, who's been running for years.
Right.
But yeah, you were like, dude, they're really fun. And like, you've been a Hoosier guy for years.
Yeah.
So that was a little bit of positive affirmation. That was the first one at Mid-Ohio.
And the nice thing is like, you know, there's going to be a lot of people in the paddock that are coming up in either, you know, maybe not so much time trials because they're going to be boners for lap times and they're going to run their specific tire.
Right.
But all the HPDE guys, they're looking for a cheap tire.
Yeah.
And if we run them for a weekend or two and say, hey, for $200, you want to take these tires off? They're going to eat them up.
Well, but like Time Attack, most of our Time Attack classes are, like, they got to run those tires too.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, you can hand them down to the Club TR guys or whatever. You know?
And now that you have, like, a set tire, like 225, 35, 45, 55, there's not just 4 tires available in the paddock.
Right.
You know, I might be able to sell these to some dude with a GTI.
Right.
Where, like,
right.
you know, someone like Swenson's going to sell his to, like, you know, another Corvette or, like, an F80 M3 or something that's going to run 275. Yeah.
Right.
So.
What wheel and tire are you going to run in this thing?
So it's going to be the Apex...
18s or 17s?
18s.
Okay.
18 by 9.5, I think the same I've always had, plus 22.
Okay.
And then, just the 245 40s. We're going to play around with some staggered sizes.
Yeah, because we're allowing staggers this year.
Right.
What is it, 20 mil difference?
20 mil to
I
front to
so
back.
Long ago, I can't think.
So we're gonna play around with different approaches to that.
Yeah, that'll be cool. I have a lot of faith that we're going to have better racing everywhere. everywhere in the field. That's the goal. Is I want more people to have the potential to win, but I also want more people to have fun.
Yeah.
Right.
Versus spread out because I'm on the sheet. I'm on my shitty old tires this weekend. Like the delta between a shitty old street tire and a brand new street tire is about half or less of what a shitty old Hoosier versus a brand new Hoosier is.
Right.
So I think that delta is gonna tighten everybody up, and then also like brand new Hoosiers versus cast off street tires. That's a 4-second delta, you know.
And you're not going to win anything but H2Os in the rain.
Right.
I don't care how.
And then you got to throw them away that weekend because you use them for 5 minutes.
Right.
Like now they're shit.
You've melted them.
Now you have to buy brand new ones. You know, like that's just it. Hopefully, one of the thoughts was, well, people are going to have more money to spend racing. Like, even if they want to overspend everybody in street tires, they're going to have enough for a few more entries left over versus the same activity in Hoosiers. And we saw it in Gold Pass tickets, like, the past 24 hours.
Yeah. Right. Dude, people are stoked.
Dude, it's...
It levels the playing field a little bit.
It's unreal how fast Gold Pass sold.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I had been following it the last week. You know, hey, when's this coming out? When's that coming out? This, that, the other thing. When I got the email that it's going to open up for pre-sale at 4, I, like, left the job site so that I pulled into our yard and parked, like, my big digger truck, and I sat there at, like, 3... I got there at, like, 3:58, and I'm like, perfect.
Yeah.
Fired up the car, sat there, waited, boom, code, got the events I want. I was really, like, worried... Not worried, but, like, I really wanted to do the Lime Rock event because of, like, the throwback to the touring cars. Right. It's the smallest track. You're not going to have a Road America style entry.
No, you're not going to have 40, 50, 60 cars. We're hoping for 35 cars.
Right.
And basically, that event is basically sold out.
Yeah.
Because we sold 35 season passes for TLTC.
So
wild.
Yeah, that's, you know, so...
Most of them are 46 events. So.
Yeah.
I can't thank the community enough. It's pretty wild to think that you have a motorsports series that is like hard to get tickets to drive in. Like that's not a thing.
I got my comp license in 2011. I've been doing competitive shit since 2008.
Yeah.
Never would I ever register for a race before the next one, because who knows if you're going to ball the fucking car.
Or like the night before, you're like,
I guess I'll do it.
Yeah.
Looks like three more people
entered. Look at the weather.
Yeah.
You know, talk to your buddies, see if they're coming.
But so, I mean, even back when we were racing in a different series, like, we were excited if there were four other people in our class.
Yeah. No, I've been in those series.
Now we're 10 times that.
Like, it's not like we want to take anything away from, you know, from the other historic series that have been around forever.
Yeah.
But the biggest goal with GLTC, and I've said it a bunch of times, is to put club racing in the eyeballs of a bunch of car enthusiasts that don't even know what club racing is.
Right.
And we've done that with thousands of people. Like,
right.
Thousands of people see club racing and like, you could do that? Like, that's a thing?
Yeah.
Like, we had 38 million unique hits on, or 38 million clicks on social media this year, like, between Instagram and live streams and all that stuff. And, like, 38 million impressions, whatever you call it. And, like, that's a lot of people looking at club racing and Time Attack.
Absolutely.
And a lot of them at the festivals. You've been to festivals.
Yeah.
Like, you're driving in front of thousands of people. It's pretty fun.
It's nuts, dude. And, you know, I'm sure it's kind of a surreal experience. It's surreal for all the people racing, but, like, think about Doug Kramer and even Kyle now, because he's done the pro racing. You got these people that go out there and spend $30,000, $40,000 a weekend, maybe $20,000. I don't know what they spend more than we spend.
The spend at SRO is like $25,000 to
$30,000. Right. So they're spending all this money to act like a pro driver.
Right.
To have a couple hundred people at the track.
Right.
Maybe be on CBS Sports Network at like, you know,
a month later.
One in the afternoon on a Sunday. And, you know, they DVR it and they watch it and it's cool. We're like, this is a big deal.
And you're spending $450 a weekend.
Right.
Plus your whatever consumables.
Yeah. And, dude, honestly, the whole...
It's not a $5,000 entry fee.
The platform of the four races, it takes so much stress away. Like, if you, you know, if you're pretty competitive and you want to win the event or finish up the top, you're like, that run kind of sucked, but so did so-and-so, so we're still in it.
Right.
And
you just get more, of the fun stuff, the starts and the stops. You know?
Right.
The green and the checker is the fun stuff.
Dude, so. And honestly, like... I don't want to call it the downtime, but, like, the time between the events.
Yeah.
We have so much fun. Like, we've built, like, a fucking regular paddock chill zone.
Yeah. We have our squad. We have our routine.
It's a lot of
tradition.
Fun, man. Like, my wife never used to... I've been with my wife now for 8 years, and she'd come to some of the events.
Right.
She actively wants to come to the gridlock
events. Yeah, she's always on the scooters.
Dude, scooting around, dude. Man. She got her and Fritz driving around looking for action, you know, and it's... That right there is evident that what you're doing is working.
Well, the paddock vibe, that's like that's most of the reason you go to the racetrack is like, where are my buddies at? Like,
right.
where's the best barbecue tonight? You know, but it, I want everybody's events to be like this. And I think like if you bring the younger people in and you like show the motorsports culture to like thousands more people a year, like maybe these racetracks are a thing when I'm 60 and I can dick around with my vintage Civic, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the whole motorsports world is changing so much every year. Like we got to have as much fun as we can while we can do it. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. What do you guys all do at Performance Euro Works? Like what's your bread and butter?
Bread and butter is building BMW M3s.
Yeah.
You know, for the most part. I mean, these guys will bring these fairly factory street cars and they want to turn to something wild and crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, again, we have some cars that look bone factory stock, but they run high 9 seconds.
No
way. A quarter
way.
Mile, yeah. And then we have obviously full-on street cars that are adding more cylinders to the motor. So, so we do a little bit of everything in between.
What's the twin turbo motor? What's the code on that engine?
S55.
That's right.
Yeah.
And those things, you were telling me those things can make like 700 wheel. Like,
oh, no yeah. Problem. Yeah, so like my daily driver with like a very, very mild turbo upgrade and a tune and E85, it's 700 wheel on the dot.
That's real.
And so that's me.
Dude, that's
keeping
so stupid. That's like dry sump Ford 46.3s.
Last year, you were like, you want to take it for a ride on the block? And I was like, no. I don't need 700. Make everything else seem mundane. I
it's
think
so
no,
wild.
Thanks.
I don't ride in new cars anymore. I can't do it. It makes all my shitboxes seem like shitboxes.
I hide behind the term visceral. Like all my cars are visceral. I like them like that.
Really,
you know,
like that engaged driving experience. You know.
I don't want to drive a car that I can't afford, so
yeah,
thank
like
you very much.
Can't afford to throw away.
The European car scene, I think, changed quite a bit. Because obviously, like, these E36, these E46 M3s, and even E90 M3s.
This was, like, the thing until a few years ago.
Yeah, I mean, like, in a straight line, reality is, like, they weren't really that fast.
They were, like, 14-second cars.
Yeah, but they were built for the road course, which is why we built so many of them. But then, now all of a sudden, these new cars that are direct fuel injection, really good high pressure fuel pumps, big turbos from factory.
Okay.
They're all straight lines, but the clientele, like it really shifted towards straight line racing. But then people forget that the BMW Motorsport M4 GT4, like the factory race car, had a very, very successful year.
Right.
And like one of our goals this year is to actually create a little bit of a shift in the community that don't forget this is actually still built for the road course. My goal with Grid Life this year is actually to take my street car and actually turn it into a time attack car to do the different classes, to not have 700 wheel but maybe have 400 wheel, something nice and safe, and remind people that this is the M3's heritage.
Yeah.
It's meant to be on the track. So we're looking forward to obviously clearly doing a lot of the GLTC stuff and then the time attack stuff.
Turbos, you can run street GT.
Mm-hmm.
You can
definitely
go
the plan.
Pretty fast.
Pretty fast. Yeah,
I mean, so we haven't seen a real... Actually, we have seen Street GT get won by, an M4 Alex Arteta, but not like domination. We haven't seen like a crazy wild effort.
Right.
But that's a lot of power.
It's a lot of power.
You can make like 500 something on the factory turbos.
Oh yeah, easily.
Wow.
Yeah, on 93 octane, we pretty much consistently make 500 to 525
that's
wheel.
Wild.
But like even then, I mean, we obviously do have some clients that do drive them at the track.
Right.
I do shift the power band. I make it like a very naturally aspirated style shape of the power band to make it at least manageable.
And you're just using OEM ECUs and all that stuff?
Yeah, all factory stuff. I mean, the new ECUs in these cars, they're damn near a standalone.
So
I mean, I can do anything and everything with them.
Are you the tuner?
I am, yes. Okay. So I'm the one running on the dyno
pretty
much all day, every day.
Yeah, dinos are... you got to teach me a little bit about dinos.
Yeah, definitely.
We just picked one of them.
Nice.
That's right. That's what I heard.
So what did you guys end up getting?
We got a two-wheel drive dyno gen on a trailer.
Nice. So bring it to the events and all that good
stuff.
So
it'll help, obviously, with GLTC and, for people that... There's a lot of GLTC drivers who are like, man, my local dyno jet's 5 hours away.
Yeah,
now it's at the track.
Yeah, that's perfect.
And it's also like at spectator events, like... How many car shows have you seen with the trailer dyno?
Right,
and people
just
run that thing.
Right.
Hopefully it pays for itself. It pays for a couple of people to run it.
I'm sure.
But like, it's also a tuning and a sorting out thing. Like, how many time attack drivers go out in the street and like have their buddy trying to tune it?
Right.
Like, that's stupid. We're going to get kicked out.
Exactly.
Like, the local cops hate that.
Yeah.
Now they can just, $80.
Yeah.
make a bunch of poles, you know.
Right.
And then I think on top of that too, the fact that you guys are that you guys got your own dyno, it will add that other standardized level of consistency of measurement.
That's the thing.
Which I think
like,
is a big deal, especially
for dyno race a bunch of, and Ryan had some issues with his tune changes, you know.
Right.
Like
yeah, right.
The car makes 40 horsepower if you look at it wrong.
Right,
like,
exactly.
So you got people that don't have the time to sort that out, or they haven't been in the variety in the situation where like you know, the atmospheric pressure, you don't know what the ECU trickery needs, like, you know what it needs this weekend now.
Right.
If you're in the hunt, like, hey, we're just going to verify.
Right,
throw
absolutely.
That extra 20 pounds in or take that extra 20 pounds out, you know what it makes today.
Exactly.
So I think it's a convenience thing for drivers.
Yeah.
Scrutineering thing, it's going to keep everybody honest.
Yeah, so. It's always looming.
Right.
You'll always see it there.
And like, at a couple of, well, you might not, but you always will, probably.
Yeah, they don't even know that till the day
only
of.
We had a couple of events like, do we have the dyno on site? Like Gingerman, there's one at the shop down the road,
right?
In the facility, but like that's pretty rare. And a couple of other tracks have had like Mustangs on site, but you can't really compare those.
It's different.
A couple of keystrokes, you can make a Mustang make whatever you want.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
Yeah.
Not that there's, and they're tuning tools. It's not a racetrack,
right?
But like, dyno jets are obviously a little bit more comparable.
Right.
Know,
across the board.
Across the country, across
they
the
are.
Board. You know, atmospheric pressures, all this stuff. So it's not perfect, but it'll help us. It'll help us hopefully have even better racing. So.
Absolutely.
And it's a convenience for drivers. It's a fix for drivers. People can fix their car. They can sort their car.
Sure,
so
sure.
I'm excited about it, but it's also just another thing to do. So.
Yeah. I remember back in the day, NASA, Dave Royce, when he still ran it, he had, like, the most rickety-looking dyno on a trailer that was, like, dude, you had to go up, like, 5 foot of... 5 foot high of ramp, but it was like a 30 foot long ramp.
Yeah,
it was some sketchy shit.
Yeah,
and we used that sketchy dyno at the NASA championships
years back. Yeah.
There were some pretty. I mean, I don't want to call them hillbillies, but like there were some questionable people running it.
Yeah,
and I remember the way they were just revving the shit out of it and driving them. I told the dudes that this was sequential because they wouldn't do sequentials. It just has a high shift. I was like, oh, it's sequential. I'll do it because they would just bounced off the rev limiter in every gear and just loved it. They were having like
having a blast.
No mechanical sympathy.
They didn't give a shit. Won their car.
They're getting paid.
So I was like, oh yeah, it's sequential.
See how many of these shit boxes we can blow up.
So that'll be cool, man.
Yeah, we're excited about that. So we got to go to Virginia to pick it up, but the thing's only got like a couple hundred poles under its life.
It's probably the one we used as
like
a championship.
Probably. This dude took it to 2 car shows. And then he was like, this is too much work.
Yeah.
And then he put it in the garage and forgot about it.
There's been a bunch of like donk ass cars been running.
Like put like some 57 Chevys on it. And, like, that was it. It's a nice looking unit. I'm excited.
That's cool.
But yeah, another thing to think about, another thing to staff and man, but whatever. We'll get her done.
Yeah. Hell yeah, man.
Your dyno, how booked up are you? People are looking to tune and things out.
I mean,
is that like every day almost?
It's almost every day.
So that's like a big piece of
energy. It is. I mean, and on top of that, here locally, you know, ironically enough, there are only literally a couple accessible four-wheel drive dyno jets.
That's the big thing. Especially nowadays.
And like, I mean, for us, you know, originally I wanted a two-wheel drive, but with a lot of these newer European cars, even if a two-wheel drive car, we need all four wheels spinning at the same time, so I was gotta get.
I bet you they're selling a lot more four wheel drives than two wheel drives now.
A lot.
But it's hard to put on a trailer. So.
Yeah, a little bit.
It's a big
one. But yeah, no, I mean, fortunately, like I said, it's very much paying itself off, and mainly for me, it's a development tool. I mean, back in the day, I used to have to rent dynos from all over the state, and then I'm wasting time transporting the car. Been paying an endless amount. I was like, you know,
you pull it out one garage door, pull it in another, and you're working in the car.
Exactly.
And we were actually just talking at dinner, like some of the dynos you used to be able to access and use, like AMS, for example, two of them, but you couldn't just call up and say, I want a tune.
Yeah, they're busy now.
They'd be like, you can do a $50,000 GTR build? Oh, then we can get you on the dyno.
Right.
But that's all they're tuning out. So it's in your backyard, you just can't get to it. So.
No, the shop is cool looking. I'm glad I got to stop by.
Yeah, it's getting there. Like I said, very much a work in progress. Hopefully by middle of the year, it's going to look a little bit different.
It looks like you've been here for a long time, and you're like, it's kind of a mess. We're just moving in. Like, this is like a nice shop.
Yeah,
this looks great.
It's getting there.
I mean, last week even, like on one day, so I was off all last week. I kind of took off between Christmas and New Year just to work on this.
Right.
And so I was around the shop all week. And they basically just took off New Year's Eve, and like this was a whole wall right here. I mean, once again, the podcasters will appreciate it.
Oh, no. So, actually, we had a huge pallet.
Yeah, it was a pallet wall. Tires stacked, all kinds of shit. We put these up, painted them, made it look nice, put some engines on there.
And then, like, above the dyno, we do have, obviously, a mezzanine floor where we stack all of our client race tires that we take with us. And, yeah, we're just ultimately just trying to tidy up the place as much as we can and just make it as free-flowing.
No, I didn't expect the shop to be this big. Like, most shops are a lot smaller.
Yeah, no, it's a good space. I mean, we were very fortunate to have, you know, the opportunity to be in this standalone building. And the biggest thing is trying to get a dyno running in all these other different complexes, it was very, very hard to get approval for.
And you're in a good industrial space.
On the weekends, you can do like third gear races down the cul-de-sac.
The drift tracks just
ripping down here. It's good times.
We're definitely getting there. It's like week by week, we have our little projects, you know, in between all the car stuff that we're trying to tackle.
And
ultimately, the goal is just to make it look nice and tidy.
And client's wishes.
Yeah.
Like he texted me last week. He's like, hey, you know, one of our other racers, Alan Kosoff in SCCA, is like, he thinks he wants to go to Sebring.
Oh, man. That's
so
a
I'm going to load it up and go to Sebring.
Yeah.
So tomorrow he's going to prep the 996 and then head out next week.
And then
to
I leave
Sebring
on Tuesday and I'm gone for a week. Trackside support.
That's a freaking hike.
Yeah, it is.
Is that a majors race down there?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yep. First one of the year.
Yeah, they usually start with Homestead or Sebring or something like that.
Yeah, so it's going to be actually a big field. I don't know if I told you. 21 cars.
What class?
T2.
Okay.
SCCA T2. So,
that's like a runoff.
The majors are usually pretty big numbers.
Yeah, they are.
How do people find out about Performance Yearworks?
Man, fortunately, word of mouth.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, thankfully, you know, for us, most of our clients in our generation, they're clearly on social media quite a bit. So, I mean, Instagram page, Facebook. But for us, it's going out to the events.
Yeah.
You know, we have actually a lot of clients that are doing HPDE with Grid Life, with NASA.
I see your stickers on more and more cars.
Yeah, they're getting there. Yeah, they're getting there. But, yeah, I mean, fortunately, over the years, we developed a really, really strong community, very, very close-knit.
Right.
And then, just kind of spread
that's the way to build a business, too.
It is.
How long have you guys been around?
I started the business at the tail end of 2015.
Okay.
So we're just about to hit almost 6 years.
That's like twice as long as most shops run.
Yeah. So. Yeah. We're trying. I mean, I started alone in a small 1,500 square foot room and then slowly expanded as the years came by.
That's like a pivotal time frame in Eurocar, like aftermarket Eurocar world. Mm-hmm. Like they really changed a lot in the last 6-7 years.
They really, really did.
Yeah.
They really did.
And it's amazing how fast you can make them go.
It's wild.
It's dumb.
It's wild.
That's real. That's real.
A lot of these cars, they could
properly do properly stupid fast.
Yeah. I mean, they could do a little bit of everything exceptionally well. Right. It's wild.
And they're a lot more reliable than they were 12 years ago.
They're a lot more reliable.
Yeah, they are.
But they still have their little quirks and issues that thankfully keep us busy.
You
got
to know how to work on them,
too. You do. And I mean, unfortunately, the cars are getting smarter and smarter, so we're constantly having to invest in different computers.
Yeah, new equipment.
Diagnostic systems.
That stuff is so intimidating to me. Like, I took the computer out of my truck and put a 12-valve Cummins in it. I could tune it with a screwdriver.
I'd love to put just carburetors on this.
Yeah, some DCOE side drives on this thing.
Every time with the BMW, you brought it up earlier. We had some issues with it last year and with the tuning of it.
Right.
And I'd get so frustrated. And I would just like, you know, the other car that I have fun with, it's a Falcon and it's carbureted and it's a fucking screwdriver.
Right.
It's a flathead screwdriver. Yeah, it runs good now.
You had one weekend where like your car wouldn't make the same horsepower on the dyno.
You check
it on Thursday and then like on Sunday it's making like 18 more or something crazy like that.
Like, it was like 210 on Thursday.
Yeah.
And then we race it, and it said 220. And I'm like, okay, that's not right, but whatever. And I even told you. I remember I came to you, and I was like, dude, there's no way. I offered to dyno again after the fourth race.
Right.
And it made like 220. It picked up another, like 15 horsepower.
None of it made any sense.
And I'm like, dude, none of this makes sense. I don't
know what's
going on.
That's a frustrating
problem. Dude, I was very defeated.
When you can't trust your own car, and then you feel like everybody thinks you're a cheater for 5 hours.
Right. That was
annoying.
So I'm pumped about this because everybody knows everything
just
about
this. Just bring this bitch out.
Everyone knows about it.
So. No more PVC restrictors or anything.
No, exactly. No,
didn't you have like a 2-inch PVC pipe? In
one inch.
One inch?
1 inch
inside diameter?
Yeah.
It's so stupid.
Yeah.
So that was...
That was part of the thing is that, and then on top of that, with it being a 3.2 liter, you know,
so
taking those points and then
it wasn't advantageous at all.
Like, what's the point of having
it just
that big of a motor?
And it's heavier, and it's expensive, it blows up, you don't want to replace it.
Yeah.
You're better off putting just like a
something basic small and cheap.
Right, exactly.
I did think about V8s because I know that, you know, well, our, you know, new our new champion ran one. Yeah. And, but it's, I don't know, I just wasn't getting stoked on it.
Yeah.
You know, I want a little bit of RPM.
And like the V8, like, they all put LS dry sub systems in them now. I mean, like, you gotta invest in those things too.
Yeah.
You can put a truck motor in, sure, but like, you gotta make that thing oil too. You
know? Right.
So. Yeah.
I think it'll be fun, and it's super light.
Yeah, I'm pumped.
And like, how easy is this to work on?
Yeah, I'm pumped to race it, and I'm pumped to just do a lot more lapping in it too.
Right.
I might even do a little bit of autocross. I have noticed a trend that some of the fastest in the series are like pro solo champs and shit.
Like 9, 14 time, 12 time.
Yeah, dude, I've done like 3 autocrosses in my life, and I did a little bit of high speed autocross back in the day with Midwestern Council. So like, I have every intention to trailer this down to Route 66 Speedway and hang out with some Cone people.
No, seat time is king too. Obviously, you can dial a car in a lot faster. You know, if you take a lot of time doing it.
Yeah.
So, a lot of us like we'll go to the event and we'll be like, practice is fun. I'm like, yeah, that's fun. You don't even think about it. And then, like, oh, shit, you're in qualifying. You're like, man, now something sucks. And I got to start tuning. And then by, like, race 4, it's like, I think the car's feeling pretty good. Right, you know, right, like.
Right. And you're always making changes to the previous setup.
Right.
So now you're guessing the whole time. And we never got a chance to test it like we wanted to.
And then, like, and then you see the guys who are real good. They got freaking books and Bibles of what they've done over the past 7 years. Yeah, you know, like. Or you're just a freak alien like Tomo who's driven 1,000 cars.
Right. So you just know.
You just kind of know what you want instinctively, and you're helped by really smart people who know that chassis.
Right.
You know, ASM's got fucking 40 ES2000s.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, when they bring out a fleet, they can go with 4 different aggressive or 8 different aggressive changes and be like, which one, guys? Let's get together.
Yeah. No, we want spec 2 in the front, spec 3 in the rear, and then get some guys on it. Right
now. Yeah. That's. I mean, that's awesome. Kudos to them
but
for that.
But yeah, I mean, you got to put the time into the car too, and you got to be able to do it. And you also got to be able to afford to fix it. So.
Right. Yeah. And like with this thing too, we're just making it. I mean, after the first year, I went away with all the adjustable suspension. There's no, you know, these are just fixed dampers.
Right.
And it's awesome. I just make sway bar
just
adjustments.
Crazy Revell Bilsteins, right?
Right. And now this is just a little bit easier even with this motor. So it's just getting, it's nice. It's getting easier and easier.
Right.
Versus back in the day, we just get more complex.
Yeah.
You know.
No, it's going to be fun. I can't wait to hear it and see it. It's going to sound weird.
Yeah. it should be wired, finished. Monday's the plan.
Okay.
And hopefully fired up by the weekend.
And radiator just plumbing, make a hose?
Yeah, it's actually at K-Power, though. The fabricator there, Chandler, has someone that I think he used to work with back in the day.
Yeah, he's a good friend of ours. He's a
good fabricator. He's
incredibly talented.
So he's changing a few things because the BMW had like a sealed system. There was no radiator cap, so we're kind of adapting some things.
Gotcha.
I thought about getting an S2000 one, but it doesn't quite fit.
Right.
So this will be easier in the long run.
Yeah, make it drop in.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe make a second one afterwards if it works and have a backup.
Right. Everyone's like, you're going to lean it over V-mount?
You put a lot of radiators in the middle, you should probably have an extra
fucking
radiator.
It's a brand. That's why. It's a brand new one. So I was like, I'm not going to get another new radiator. It's got like 2 races on it.
And of course.
But
no, it's going to be cool. I'm glad I could stop by.
Yeah, I'm pretty pumped on it. And it's going to be a good year, I think.
Yeah, really, really excited.
It like as long as we get less rain and more smiles, I'm good. It's going to be fun. Where do people reach out to Performance Hero Works?
Yeah.
Website, Facebook, and all that jazz?
Definitely hop on the website, performanceheroworks.com. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Instagram as well. But yeah, we're pretty easy to get a hold of.
Yeah, Ryan, you still do social media crap? Or no?
A little bit.
That Falcon looks pretty dope.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I do all the racing stuff. I spend the majority of my disposable income on this.
Mm-hmm.
And like nobody really cares. But then they see the Falcon and the world stops.
Yeah. Hot Wheels, like.
Yeah, yeah.
I built a car out of it.
Yeah, more. So, yeah, Ryan James Upham. So,
that Falcon is pretty dope. You bought it from a dude that I had done some doors for years ago.
Yeah.
And
dude. That thing was ghetto.
That car was not built well.
No. My wife was like, there's a spoon as your gas pedal.
Yeah.
And like, he took this rot rad approach.
Rat rod.
Rat rod.
Yeah.
Dyslexic. And it was, I get it.
Yeah,
it's kind of neat if it's done right, but this wasn't done right.
He just done with crap on the floor. Right? He like looked at the floor and he like built the car out of it.
And I remember he had like on the it's a 61, although I kind of retrofitted to a 62. But he had on the back having fun in my 61.
Yeah,
and it drove me bonkers crazy. I took 80 grit sandpaper and just took it off, and there was still red paint underneath.
Yeah,
like they painted it like 8 times. I mean, it's come a long way.
No, it's a cool car. Is it wrapped?
No, it's painted.
I didn't know if you painted it or wrapped it.
Yeah, we painted it. I actually got hit in it.
Really?
Yeah, dude. I had it. I had like these fiberglass fender flares on it, and it was just a cool driver. And I took it out. I had been down in at Hurricane Irma. The big hurricane was down there working power outage shit. Came home, and I told my wife, I was like, I'm going to go out one last time in the car before it gets cold out.
Right.
Ran it out of gas, as you do with old cars. Gas gauge doesn't work for shit. And I was pushing it with the door open. As you can imagine, anyone with the push of shame. Door open, hand on it, hand on the steering wheel. And I look behind me, and I see a car coming. I thought we made eye contact. Then I hear the screech. I jumped in the car as he took the door off.
No!
Yeah, dude. He ripped it out of my hands. I almost fell on the ground. The door broke the hinges, hit the front fender, came back and hit me as I was going into the car. It, like, changed the trajectory of the car, like, 45 degrees. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, it was so crazy.
What kind
of
car hit you?
Buick. It's probably an old man texting or something. He fell asleep. I don't know. There was like five lanes.
Daydreaming about the soup at the early bird special.
Right,
man.
Dude. Yeah. It was like four lanes with an open turn lane, and he hit me.
That's so bizarre.
After that, I fought with the insurance company forever.
Yeah.
And because of that, I was able to do
body work.
And the steel wide body, and then I had a little bit left over for paint. It's not a great paint job, but it's a good enough. You know. Yeah.
No, it's a cruiser though.
Yeah.
Like, you're not taking it to Pebble Beach.
No. I drive the shit out of it.
It's modified. Like, right. It's just a kind of a. It's got like a track look to it.
Yeah. It actually. It's funny. I took him for on the. We went on the track.
Like Autobahn.
He was like, "Holy shit! This thing actually turns."
And sort
like,
of works.
Everyone thinks it's a novelty car. Right. Like it just looks cool, but it's really fast.
Yeah.
I mean, I weighed it at the Blackhawk event. It's 2,600 pounds with me in it.
Oh really?
Makes close to 300 wheel, 350 pound foot of torque.
That would be pretty quick too.
Dude, and it turns really good.
Yeah.
So it's a funny car because people don't think it'll be like that. They think it just looks cool sitting still.
Nothing. Like, everything from that generation, like, it gains positive camber when you, like, compress the wheel. You know, like, everything is whacked on this. But, yeah, those are cool looking cars, though.
So. Yeah.
Anyway, all right, well, I'm going to go home and go to bed.
Yeah,
awesome. We'll do the same. Thank you for visiting. Yeah, appreciate
man. It. The show brought to you by our Patreons, and we really appreciate all y'all. And ApexTrackCoach.com. Check them out. Apex Pro, the new Gen 2 units are out. And hit up Abe if you're a Patreon and you buy one. You get a year of Lap Timer Plus, all their cool jazz. So, talk to you guys soon.
Slip Angle was created by Austin Cabot and Adam Jabay. Co-hosted by Derek Yarbrough and production by Abram Schmucker, who mixes all of our terrible audio. If you like the show, please rate us and review us on iTunes and come and find us in the pits at a grid live to say hello.